What is up, wrestling fans? Welcome again to another pay-per-view point edition of the Smart Cow Moment Smack Talk podcast. This is a post-show of WWE Elimination Chamber 2024 or Elimination Chamber Perth or Elimination Chamber Please Go to Australia. My God, we really want you here. That's basically the message that they were giving here. I am your host, as always, Tony Mango, joined as always by Callum Wiggins.
Hello there.
So, we just got done watching this show that ran from 4 in the morning until it's 8:30 in the morning. What time is it over there?
It's currently about just gone 1:30 in the afternoon.
So you got a full night's rest.
Oh, yeah.
I got about maybe 2 hours of, like, interrupted sleep, which part of it involved, like, Dolph Ziggler being mad at me in a dream. I don't know why that was the thing that I had, but I'm getting a weird glare going on here with these glasses. I'm going to take them off. So I know that I am like number two on the rest level because Rob was easily the worst out of us. That's why he's not here. He was just like, I slept the entire time. I didn't miss anything. And you know what? He didn't really. I feel like this was such a bland show. How are you feeling, generally speaking?
I guess I can really sum it up with the phrase 4.5 hours, 5 matches. It's, yeah, I know, as I say, I kind of bring this up every time that I watch a WWE show, which is why I don't watch a lot of WWE pay-per-views anymore, besides like the bigger ones or ones like this, where it's kind of almost, would be reckless of me not to watch because of, the time difference because of this. That there's just so much filler and crap, and it's so slow and stilted every single pay-per-view that you watch. Whereas, let's say, AEW doesn't have the right balance in terms of, like, they go on way too long, but at least, you know, if AEW showed 5 matches in 4.5 hours, people would think the world is falling apart. Whereas, whereas there needs to be, as I say, there's, I wasn't too, like, disappointed with the actual matches that we saw. I thought for the most part they were pretty good, obviously with a sliding scale, but yeah, just the overall experience of watching it was a drag.
Very much a drag. I honestly don't have much to say even about the matches themselves. I feel like they were very generic and skippable is the best word I can use for this. If you missed this pay-per-view and you're tuning in to just the post-show, whether it's like you're live, I see that we got Peter in the chat, we got Frankie. So, like, thanks, of course, for joining us, guys. I'll read those messages in a second. But if you're listening to this after the fact and you're like, let me just get a general idea, you don't need to watch this event at all. And it's not even like anything happened in there that's like, wow, you know, this big surprise that really took place that really you wouldn't have seen coming unless you watched the event. This was as straightforward of a pay-per-view as we could have gotten. Like, we said everything that was going to happen outside of, we didn't, you know, try to break into, like, who do you think is going to eliminate who from the Elimination Chamber matches? But even then, like, check out the statistics page on Smart Cow Moment. I went ahead and I did that. It was just like, oh, okay, let me bump up Drew McIntyre a couple spots for getting 3 more eliminations, or let me bump up, you know, put Becky on there for having been in one. And, like, nothing changed. It was not like there was a big difference for anything. And we're going to talk about each segment one by one, of course. As a reminder, though, we also want to know what you guys have to say. So, as always, leave your thoughts in the comments section below. Click on all the buttons you can see on there, like the like button, the subscribe button. Ring that little notification bell for next week when we do the AEW Revolution post show. Check out the Discord that we have over there on that link that you can see on there. You got the Smart Can Play stuff, Redbubble and TeePublic. You know, join our channel membership. Do the live chats if you are in the chat right now. The super chats will make sure that I read each and every one of those as we go along here. Patreon.com/smartcowmoment for that stuff. Little thanks button if you want to take advantage of that thing. But I can see we have Drew in the chat. Everything went on way too long. Yeah, that is basically it. I woke up at like 3:30 and I was like, I'm tired, but you know, I'm used to not sleeping all that well, so it's not that crazy for me. But I could see most people, if they bothered to get up for this, falling asleep. Nothing kept my attention this whole time. I had more fun just kind of like goofing around with like other stuff, just kind of you know, biding my time than actually watching any of the matches that happened. I feel like you could skip this entire thing and you could just read the results and go, oh, I figured that would happen, and then move on with your day in 3 minutes. Pretty much a worthless event. I say that with like the caveat, yeah, worthless in the sense that, yeah, they went ahead, they put on as good of a show as they could have. Lots of people are going to be like, you know, for Rhea, this is like one of the best things that's ever happened in her career, that she could main event in front of the people in Australia. A lot of people in attendance, I'm sure, enjoyed it because they're in attendance. So that's always going to make it better. You know, every one of us agrees if you go to a show, it always makes it more interesting. So I hope that they enjoyed themselves. But man, I'm not feeling it today. you're muted right now, Callum.
Of course I am. That's fine. But I largely feel like I enjoyed it more for the most part, but that's probably due to the fact that it's just a day for me. Like, mm-hmm. It's just I've been able to get plenty of sleep, I was able to get up well in advance of it, and I've just been able to sit down and then just moved away whenever they were doing something that wasn't wrestling, which is fairly frequently. And yeah, so I don't feel particularly like negative beyond any other WWE show that I've watched in the last 2 years or so, which has always had these big interruptions because of the Peacock stuff and having to go to commercial, even though that if you pay for the premium stuff, all you see is video packages in the meantime.
So they wasted so much time. Yeah, you might as well not. And it's like the only benefit to it is when you're watching older shows and then you have less of the commercial break. But God, the amount of stuff they did tonight is just like, all right, we get it. Australia has a lot of things that are great for tourism. And I know that that's obviously what they're getting paid for. So if anybody that's like, they have to do that because I know. It just means that then I have to like it. You know, I'd rather them not do that and do that all on the kickoff. And then I don't have to watch that shit because I don't care about that. I'm not watching the show to get the tourism guide of Australia or to get a video package about the Elimination Chamber on the Elimination Chamber thing. I'm watching the fucking show.
I mean, at least it's more palatable, the tourism thing for Australia, than it is for doing it for Saudi Arabia instead.
Yeah. But at least then I mean, isn't the scenery really great in Australia rather than, isn't it great that we let women drive?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess the things that I like most about this show in particular is just that because previous Elimination Chambers in more recent memory have taken place in Saudi Arabia, it was nice to see a show where the tourism stuff was just just nice shots of Australia and beaches and stuff, and that the women could wear their actual attires rather than dress up head to toe in whatever gear they put on. But yeah, so I guess in that way it was more of a beneficial show. But yeah, I can't. We'll move into all the other stuff when we actually get into the matches, but I'm not too disheartened, just a bit, you know, middle of the road, which will probably put me on the positive end.
You're going to, by default, be the more positive of the two of us, at least for this edition. But most of the people in the chat kind of echoing the same ideas, about it being sort of like blah. Some more positive things, though. The guy 123 says here, the show was the best I've watched since Crown Jewel 2021, not including WrestleMania. I'm glad you enjoyed it. The Liv stands are distraught right now. Yeah, they're definitely upset. But the first match of this show was an impromptu sort of thing that they didn't really announce too far in advance. We talked about it on the hot tags, but there was the women's tag team title match, Kabuki Warriors against Candice LeRae and Indy Hartwell. And that was just a match. Kabuki Warriors retained. I have not a single note about this whatsoever.
Yeah, it was your typical house show type of tag team match. I thought the psychology was good. They did a good job of delaying the hot tag into Indy Hartwell when the crowd had gone excited about it. And then when Indy did get in, she ran wild for a little while, totally fine. And then Candice was end up eating the pin from the insane elbow. Yeah, it was what you'd imagine that they would do on any house show in Nantucket or something.
Nantucket, out of all the things to toss out.
Yeah. But you know, I mean, I know the idea about putting this match together about getting Indy Hartwell on the show, which is totally fine. Could they not have won a match on Raw?
Right.
before. Like, surely you knew you were going. You've been going to Australia for months. Like, surely you could have just had. If you're going to have them put on this impromptu match for the tag team titles, just have them win a match. Because have they actually won a match in the last 2-3 months?
Not that I can remember, at least. But it's like it's that simple too. Like, they very easily could have just had a number one contenders match on Raw, which, like, they're looking for matches to fill time on Raw anyway. You might as well do something like that. Put them up against Shayna and Zoe, or against Katana and Kayden, or somebody, I don't know, whoever cares. And just have them win and then go like, oh, look at that. Look, you can look forward to them being on the show. They'll be on the kickoff, which kind of implies that they didn't plan to do this until like Wednesday or Thursday or so. And then they were like, oh shit, we should, you know, maybe put them on the card. Which
they had to put everyone in that Elimination Chamber Battle Royal, so they couldn't put any women on the in any other matches to qualify.
Yeah, they couldn't do it on SmackDown.
They can't do it on SmackDown because they're Raw people, and you never see Raw people on the SmackDown show.
You see SmackDown people on Raw, then you do that whole thing too, and then the brand split's a very hard brand split, and then let's immediately ignore that and not do that for the next 9 months. For anybody who's wondering, by the way, Bronson Reed, the reason why he wasn't on the show is the reason that he said was also the reason that he wasn't on the show. Like, him not being on there, the rumor was that his wife was expected to be giving birth very soon, so he was going to stick around for that. And he flat out denied that. And then he's like, oh, by the way, the reason I wasn't on here is because my wife gave birth. It's another one of those things where it's like, what's the needless... don't believe everything you read online because it's not true. Oh, yeah, it actually is completely true. Why didn't he just say, yeah, that's happening or something? I think it's really strange, but at least that's why he wasn't on the card. It's for the best reason. So congrats to Bronson Reed. And I don't know her name, his wife. That's awesome news. The best possible reason to not be on the show. He's got a kid now. It's great.
I'm just looking now at Indy Hartwell's record on cage match. She's won one match on Raw since Raw or NXT since her last title defense of the NXT Women's title.
Who was it against?
It was her and Candice against Chelsea Green and Piper Niven on the 15th of January.
Well, that's as much of an indicator of being the number one contenders as possibly be, right?
Yeah, it doesn't matter that the week after they lost to Shayna Baszler and Zoe Stark in a tag team match.
Yeah, very easily could have just done a number one contenders match or something, and I don't know why they don't bother to do that.
It's not even that. It's a case of, like, they had that match with Shayna Baszler and Zoe Stark and lost. They haven't had a tag team match since that match.
Not even on, like, main event?
No. Nothing outside of house shows. They haven't even had a tag team match. The only other matches they've had since that have been in the Royal Rumble and then that Battle Royal. So they're not even having tag matches, let alone winning tag matches.
Right.
So,
I mean, obviously, everybody, if you were to ask people in WWE and be like, so why did you not set that up better? They'd be like, do you really fucking care? We just wanted Indy on the show. Shut up. And there's way too many things in WWE in particular these days that the answer is, just shut your fucking mouth and go along with it.
I mean, I guess you can make the argument as well that this must be the first time, probably since Evolution, there's been a pay-per-view where the majority of matches have been women's matches.
Yeah, three over two.
Yeah. So that's I guess that's an interesting little snippet for this one as well.
Making history here. Now they're going to throw that into another statistics machine, which, by the way, I am convinced that whether it's Michael Cole himself or it's Corey Graves or it's, as Rob was like, oh, maybe they're interns or something, I am dead set that they went on my Elimination Chamber statistics page. Those fuckers didn't know that information, didn't do that research themselves. I want to shout out, goddamn. But, we had that match. There's nothing more to it. Kabuki Warriors are obviously going into WrestleMania as champions anyway, so that was one of the many foregone conclusion matches that happened on this show, and good for Candice and Indy to be on there. I'm sure Indy is, like, over the moon that she competed, and they did a fine enough job, but it's another match that really, did anybody need to see it? Is anybody really going to care if they missed it? I don't think so. Second match of the night, first one of like the main card itself, was the Women's Elimination Chamber match. Entrance, for anybody who's curious about that, Raquel, Bianca, Tiffany, Liv. That meant that we were starting off with Naomi and Becky Lynch. More positive people on Becky Lynch on side in that. And then way more positive people when it came to Tiffany Stratton. A lot of people were pro Tiffany Stratton on this. Bodine shot me a message during this about like, bro, Tiffany Stratton is so over right now. She had a great showing tonight. Liv Morgan came out to a solid pop. Naomi came out, Naomi didn't come out next. Naomi was eliminated by Tiffany Stratton. Raquel Rodriguez following that, Bianca Belair coming out, kind of move along and do a series of moves that, you know, I mean, like some people, they're going to be like, oh my God, this is one of the best things ever to me and you and people that have seen a million of these matches. It's not all that special. Like Liv Morgan jumped off the pod and did a senton. We've seen 30 different variations of that before that have been better. So cool for her. Not all that amazing in my book. I couldn't fucking do it, but then again, I'm not saying that I can. So, Stratton shoved Becky off the pod. It was pretty by the books. Then she does a swanton. That's kind of her big moment. Raquel was taken out by Bianca with a KOD that she seemed to struggle with. I was surprised about that. Did you catch that? How like that was like, you know, she had her like, I don't really know what I could use as a prop on here, but
I think
like my water bottle, like she had her like this and she's like, my God, it's like you picked up heavier people than Raquel, you know.
I think it might be ring rust and Raquel's parts, just because she hasn't wrestled for a few months now, so maybe it's just a case of her having more difficulty taking the move than Bianca hitting it.
Maybe she didn't like post correctly
or go over as quickly.
Yeah,
she just hesitated a little bit going over, but it was fine.
I mean,
It makes it look like more of a struggle to do. So I'd actually prefer that than a more, both the more stylish looking KODs and KODs like that both have their merits to them.
So what you're saying is substance over style. And then that's all the more reason why Liv Morgan's springboard sunset flip thing was completely fucking ridiculous.
She's been doing that a lot. She's done that quite a few times. So.
Has she? I'd pick up on that until right now.
I've seen that. Again, it's like that. I can understand it, like to do a little bit of a more flashy thing. I don't see how it adds more strength to the move that she's bounced off the ropes, obviously. But if it's more of a sunset flip from the pod, then maybe that would have been something. But you know, if she can do it, then she might as well.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, every time that you see a move where somebody does something where they set up something just to be in a completely different position and then do a move, like you do like a spin and then you land back on your feet and then do a DDT, you're like, well, that's not the same as a tornado DDT. You're just spinning and then doing that. Like, I hate the somersault into the corner that people do where they stop right before they get to the corner. They'll be like, you know, now I do an elbow or something.
Well, I mean, eventually we mentioned Tiffany Stratton. Tiffany Stratton does that better than anybody. The like gymnastics flips into the corner in the elbow. She looks like she's the only person I've ever seen do that move that looks like she has more momentum hitting the elbow than she did when she started running.
Yeah. More so than like Maxine does, for instance. Yeah. But she was great in this. You know, she did a couple of spots here and there, and the fans were really, really digging her. So she came out of this looking, I think, like the best out of all of them.
Yeah, she was incredible in this match. And like the crowd was, they'd say, the chime for Tiffy time and all of this stuff, and did a big swanton dive off the top of the pod onto loads of people on the floor. It was, she was the absolute MVP and star of this match. I tell you one thing, if she doesn't win a world title before Jade Cargill does, then they'd fuck this up royally. Not that, I'd say Jade Cargill came out in the Royal Rumble and was the star of that match, but Tiffany is a complete package already. She's only been on the main roster for a month or so. She's already, I think, better than three quarters of the roster in ring and in overness. So I think that she needs to be having a big match at WrestleMania. I don't think she should just be slotted into just a random Franken team for the tag team titles, four-way, three-way, whatever they would end up doing for that. I think she should be facing Bianca at WrestleMania.
There's a good chance that she is. I mean, they kind of hinted at that as a possibility a couple weeks ago on SmackDown.
No, they haven't done
anything at all to hint at Jade.
No, I mean, not only that, I don't think that she should just be facing Bianca. She should be beating Bianca at WrestleMania.
I'd be okay with it.
Just because that's a way to firmly establish her in the upper echelon. I'm not saying that like she would then immediately win the world title the week afterwards, but she's on SmackDown. The likelihood is that Bayley is going to be the next women's champion on SmackDown. So it kind of makes sense to me that Tiffany would be the next one down the road if she continues on this trajectory. And having her beat Bianca, or maybe just engage in a long-term feud with Bianca, maybe not even necessarily beat her at WrestleMania, in case you want to keep that Bianca winning streak alive, but then you follow that up with another match at Backlash or whatever the next pay-per-view will be. And then Tiffany wins that, maybe you do like a best of three series, then following that, she's primed and ready to take on Bayley. I'd say this match and just anything that I've seen of her since she came up to SmackDown and in her final days in NXT with the stuff that she was, the match that she was having with Becky Lynch, she's going to be a top star for WWE moving forward. And clearly with this indication, she could actually be a top babyface as well.
Yeah, if they pull the right strings and they make her character go in the right direction, they can certainly pull that off.
Or maybe she's just over in Australia as a baby face. But they'll go back to there one day. But yeah, I think that she stole the show in this. And after she was eliminated by Liv Morgan, not only did that make Liv Morgan the biggest heel in the match, but it also, I think that sucked a lot of the energy out of the match for a while.
And then it's like they ended everything with, I mean, arguably the three people that people assumed would have the biggest chances of winning this, so I get where they're going there, but the way that this ended was just sort of rushed. Like Belair gets eliminated by Morgan with like a roll up kind of thing, and then immediately afterward Morgan gets the manhandle slam and gets pinned by Becky, and it felt more to me like they were probably going for the idea of like, oh, it's like totally chaotic and Becky capitalized. But to me, it's almost seemed like they were like, fuck, we're running out of time. Can you guys just wrap it up? And I didn't like the end of that at all.
I don't think anything on this show, they said, hurry up, we're running out of time. So I can't really go with that indication. But I kind of quite liked the final sequence where all three of them were going at each other. Quite like the fact that they catch Bianca with the flash pin because they are still trying to keep her protected. That feels to me like a way that Cena would get eliminated from this type of matches. So it made sense that Liv just managed to get a sneak roll up on her, and then Becky immediately is able to connect with Liv. I thought that the finish worked pretty well. I'd say, like, overall, this is my match of the night. And I think this is the best women's elimination chamber by a considerable margin.
I don't remember them off the top of my head to be able to compare, but...
Well, no, but I remember this one. I remember this one being good. So I think I remember
You remember this one that just...
Yeah. Well, I remember the first one being okay, but it was like that was too focused on like the Bayley and Sasha going up against each other, like, and that allowing Alexa to win. The other ones, like the Shayna one, was badly booked. The one last year with Asuka winning, I can barely remember anything that happened in that one. But this one, I feel like there's enough. If for nothing else, I remember Tiffany Stratton's performance in this match, and that makes it feels like this match elevated somebody. Took someone to the made something of a star making performance, and end up with the result that we all expected, with Becky Lynch winning. So she's going to be fighting whoever won the main event of the show.
If you didn't already know who would have won that, we'll talk about that a little bit later. But this was foregone conclusion number two.
I'd say the one thing at this match that I was a little bit had raised my eyebrow about was how quickly Naomi was eliminated.
She was, like, relatively quickly eliminated compared to the other ones instead of sticking around a little longer, yeah.
Because I know Rob would probably say, if he was on this, about how, like, oh, when she came back after the run that she had in Impact Wrestling, he's like, okay, strap the rocket to her. It's like, she's back being just the same position that she was when she left. Only now she's got slightly different music, and people can always say that, oh, remember all that fun that she had at Impact whenever she gets pushed for a week or two and then loses.
She's definitely not in the position of being like, you know, she could win the world championship at any moment. No, she's exactly where she was before.
yeah, she doesn't feel like she's been positioned for anything significant at WrestleMania yet, unless I presume that she's going to just have find some kind of partner, be thrown together in some team. I could see her and Bianca teaming up in the if they don't go with Bianca and Tiffany, or they'll find someone else for her to tag with and fight for the tag titles.
Yeah, it's weird because they still haven't given any indication of if they're going to do something like, you know, the women's showcase match, or the idea that I keep pitching of the China Memorial Battle Royal, or, you know, anything along those lines. But they keep acting like people are going to be like, if there's like an infinite amount of matches that they can book for WrestleMania, because they keep specifically saying like, hey, you can't spell WrestleMania without EST. And also they're indicating that they want to do a match with Bianca, but there's not like there's enough room on the card to just have like, all right, let's do Bianca versus Tiffany, and then have this match, and then that, and then that, and then that. They only really have enough spots for like 7 to 9 matches per night. And that depends on, of course, how long they want some of these matches to go and stuff too. So I don't know. I got a feeling that a lot of people are going to be disappointed when they look at the card this year, and they're going to see that a lot of people just aren't booked, period. And, you know, I mean, obviously people like Liv Morgan, huge amount of fans. She's not going to be getting some world title match, but maybe she's doing a tag match. Maybe she's involved in that too. Maybe they kind of tie that into like bringing her back with Raquel or something. And maybe Naomi tags up with Bianca, or they do some other kind of thing. I don't remember if there's like anybody else on the SmackDown roster that would make sense to team with her. But I mean, doesn't need to make sense. They've done people in the past that have just been like the equivalent of like Naomi and Zelina are a team, and you're like, why? And it's like, oh, because we want to put them on the card for Mania, then they'll disappear afterward. And, you know, WWE's answer again will be just shut up. It's just, that's what it is. Speaking of tag teams and, you know, the whole setup of WrestleMania, another foregone conclusion, Judgment Day retaining the undisputed WWE tag team titles over the new Catch Republic. Which, if you didn't know that they were coming out, they have another one of those themes that just says their name and then they come out to generic music. The most bland era of WWE entrance music that has ever happened. I couldn't tell you why in their mind they think that this stuff is good, but it's just like New Catch Republic, whatever. It's the same rhythm as well, too, for every single one of these entrance themes. It's just da, da, da. You know, like Indy Hartwell's theme does like something similar to that. And they had a good match, you know, relatively speaking, for when you sit there and you go, when is this just going to end? And, you know, when's Judgment Day just going to retain? And Dominic got involved a little bit here and there. Bate got some really good particular pops with like his whole spinning thing where he put I think it was Damian Priest on his back and he was spinning him around. You know, good spots like that and stuff, but again, nothing that you really need to go back and check out. If you missed it, I don't think you missed much. It's not going to be some match of the year candidate or anything.
I think it was a kind of pseudo version of a classic NXT TakeOver tag team title match.
Yeah, I could see that.
Where you had all of the, had some really good spots, some things were well put together. You had Bate selling for a lot of it before Pete Dunne came in, a lot of near falls, a lot of good tag team offense. I think it went too long. I think you probably could have condensed it down to about like 13, 14 minutes. I think it ended up going close to 18 and just condensed it because it felt like they were just waiting around a lot towards the end or going like one near fall too many. It's like, okay, just wrap it up a little bit soon. I mean, I think that they did a good enough job to convince people, at least live, that the New Catch Republic could win this match with the whole Dominic getting involved and Dominic getting thrown out. And so, yeah, Dominic was the person that got the biggest reaction out of anything when he did the announcements for Judgment Day at the start. So good on him for that. But yeah, and I thought the finish was good. I thought having Finn hold on to Damian Priest while he was being double-teamed in the corner so Damian Priest could hit a double choke slam off of the middle rope, and then Finn Balor going straight out for the coup de grace, and then Finn Balor selling like his, because he'd had his finger snapped by Pete Dunne earlier, acting like his thumb just wouldn't move anymore or just couldn't get it.
I didn't catch that.
I thought that was, yeah, so I thought this was a very good tag team match, but a little bit, like, overindulgent in certain spots.
I liked that they are doing a double burning hammer that they're calling the Birminghammer.
Yeah.
I thought that was funny. Good tag team synergy between them, though. Like,
they've got a lot of fluidity.
Yeah. And I that's not too surprising, considering we've seen both of them wrestle great matches before. So
I kind of wish they would just call them British Strong Style.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, New Catch Republic is in a name that I'm a big fan of.
Because they are British Strong Style. It's just they haven't got one of the members of British Strong Style with them. So why not just keep the name? It's not like Trent Seven's going to be is using it anywhere at the moment. So
now, and he was arguably the weakest of the British Strong Style to begin with. So. Yeah, it's not like you're missing the big, you know, name. Like, you're all revolved around, say, you know, D-Generation X wouldn't have worked if he didn't have Triple H and Shawn Michaels, and you just had X-Pac. Like, you know, you would have had to throw the D in the X-Pac, and you would have done that kind of thing. But man, you know, if you're at this point in the pay-per-view, you're sitting there going, this is kind of feeling like a little bit of a waste of time. Let's talk about a huge waste of time that followed this. Not only did they have, you know, their typical, like, let's run a bunch of video packages and do all this, but we had the Grayson Waller effect segment that came out after that, which started off with Austin Theory saying it's Austin Theory live, ragging on Vegemite, and then saying, I'm going to have a Bloomin' Onion from the Outback. Here's Grayson Waller. I don't understand the philosophy behind this. Let's get him to get some heel heat, some very, very cheap heel heat, mind you, to then introduce the big babyface guy that stays babyface the entire segment so that he can introduce Seth and Cody. And this thing took fucking forever. And then, of course, once they get to the ring, it's a complete waste of time because the whole point of this was for Seth to say, in a few days, I'm going to be cleared to compete. And Cody to say, I want to fight The Rock in a one-on-one match at some point. And for Cody Seth to say, there's no one-on-one match with the Bloodline. When that comes, if that comes, you won't fight him alone. And then Austin Theory just starts doing The Rock's impressions, and they beat him up, and Grayson Waller's like, this was so stupid. They did exactly what we were complaining about on the preview stuff. We were saying they have to at least announce a match or do something. And instead they said a match in some fashion at some point may be happening. Fuck you.
Yeah, I don't really want to give this too much time or thought because they didn't either. But it was mainly just, yeah, Austin Theory was the definitive heel of this segment, the one that was going to be the parts that ended up getting beaten up. They made Grayson Waller, like, babyface through his home country, had him do a shoey with some MMA guy in the crowd. And then Rollins comes out, his entrance takes about 10 minutes because the crowd just won't stop chanting. And then Cody comes out, his entrance takes about 5 minutes because it's Cody's entrance, so it takes ages. He used, like, I thought he'd used all the pyro budget, but clearly they haven't. There's still some left behind. And then yeah, they just sit down, answer a few innocuous questions, the obvious things about, hey, Rollins is going to be fighting someone for the world title at WrestleMania, and he's apparently cleared to compete, so he'll get to see them at 100%, so he's not going to lose. And then just about, ask Cody about, oh, isn't it disappointing that people wanted to see The Rock versus Roman Reigns, and now you've come in instead? And it's like, oh, well, I'm a fan of The Rock, but The Rock wants to fight me one-on-one. It can be any time, any place. And then Rollins saying what he has been saying for the last 2 weeks, so it wasn't 2 or 3 weeks, which is anything different. It's like, well, if you're going to fight the Bloodline, then I'm going to have your back. And then as you say, yeah, just beat up Austin Theory after he does some Rock catchphrases, and, you know, that's the end of the segment. So people there got to see Cody and Seth, even though they weren't going to wrestle. And yeah, it was pointless. So yeah, I don't really want to discuss it much more. We don't know any more following this segment or have anything else that to be looking forward to beyond this, other than the fact that they've at least put the idea, or at least presented the idea, that Cody's going to fight The Rock one-on-one at some point. Although 2 weeks ago they told us that Cody wasn't fighting Roman at WrestleMania, and yet here we are. So I can't really trust anything that Cody says right now.
It's this type of stuff bothers me just from the outright, from like, why are you doing promo segments on a pay-per-view anyway? But at least if they do something in there that you wouldn't have been able to see without having all the preamble and all that, then you can sort of justify it and say, like, all right, well, you know, if the game plan for this was, for instance, for Grayson Waller to turn babyface and to be the one to beat up Austin Theory and then start a feud between those two, then you can go like, oh, okay, that's why you did it. Or if this would have been when they would have, I mean, I wouldn't have liked it if they would have just announced the match anyway, because I still would have thought that it would have been like, that should have just done that on Raw. But at least then you go, okay, the reason why you're doing this is because you want a big stage to announce that they're doing some tag match or something. But for them to just be like, hey, the thing that we've alluded to, that also might still be a thing. Come on. Waste a fucking half an hour or so. And
yeah.
I don't want to see Cody Rhodes versus The Rock on night one and then Cody against Roman on night two. I just want to see fucking Cody beat Roman on night two. Just that's all I want to see. It's as simple as can be. You waited an entire year for this shit. Why are you making it so much more convoluted than it needs to be right now? I don't understand this, but I got a feeling we're going to be talking about that after Mania. Is like, yeah, this Mania is feeling more and more like they either had no idea what they were doing for a lot of things and they're scrambling, or that so much of the plans have changed that they're scrambling. But I do not feel like they have a firm foothold on what they're doing for Mania anymore. And that goes to, like, you know, the Gunther thing that we were talking about before, of like, they have to figure out some alternative to Brock Lesnar. The stuff that they did seem to have in advance, like Becky and Rhea, are like, all right, that's playing out the way that we kind of expected. But a lot of this is just like, man, can we just fucking skip until April? Like, March is going to be a slog to get through if this is how we're getting there. But, you know, I mean, plans change with some things here and there, and I don't think that this was anywhere near the plan that they had had for the Elimination Chamber, but we had that next, the Men's Elimination Chamber match. Pods are Kevin Owens, Bobby Lashley, Logan Paul, Randy Orton. Means we're starting off with Drew McIntyre and LA Knight, which very quickly turns into a CM Punk chant, which didn't go out throughout the rest of the night, so I'm, you know, kind of happy that they didn't just hijack that, but definitely Punk was supposed to be a big part of this event. Owens is out next. Bobby Lashley's out next. Randy Orton's the third one. And then very quickly, Randy Orton takes a bump to his back. And for the entire rest of the match, he spends a good 80 to 90% of it laying down away from everybody else. And I was just like, shit, his back is injured.
I think I was pretty confident that he was just selling it very well, mainly due to the fact that I just don't think that Orton wants to be wrestling for like 20, 30 minutes plus in his current state. And then also mainly due to the fact that if his back was injured, they would have got him out of there. Like, I don't think they would have risked it if they thought that he was actually injured.
I hope that it's the case that he was just selling this really well. And I saw people tweeting out like, oh, is he trying to pull a Hangman?
You know? I doubt he would have hit like 3 or 4 RKOs if his back was actually injured. So I think that we're pretty safe.
And there's a good chance that he is just perfectly fine and he was over just selling this. Yeah. There's also a little bit of a chance that maybe he did land weird and he was like, fuck, man, this like isn't feeling great. And then kind of worked itself through and just powered through it. And maybe it's just kind of like landed a little bit awkwardly. And throughout the rest of the match, he was maybe feeling a little bit better or something. But
I'll wait and see until Dave Meltzer says that he did suffer a broken back. And then Jerome Ross Sapp says that, no, actually, he's totally fine behind the scenes.
Maybe Meltzer will look at an image of Orton and Cena from a past WrestleMania and say, that's what the plan is for me going forward.
I saw there's a stupid account online that mimics Sid Vicious. Like there's that is claiming to be Sid Vicious, even though it's not Sid Vicious, and everyone knows that it's not Sid being on Twitter, but him just putting a photo of Sid and The Undertaker from WrestleMania 13 on there, and then saying that Meltzer thinks this is the main event for WrestleMania 40.
Not my favorite WrestleMania main event. Yeah, despite Undertaker winning the title there, I'll say that.
But he shit his pants.
I mean, that bumps it up a little bit, yeah. But, you know, it's not like it's Alberto Del Rio shitting his pants in white trunks. Then that skyrockets, but what's Peter saying here? You forgot to mention the fans flipping off Dom and the screen went black. I forgot that that was
the screen did go black for 10 seconds. Yeah, I was wondering what that was about. But, yeah, there was something in this match as well, because so when Logan comes in, and I would say that prior to this, until Logan came in the ring, this was so boring. This is such a pedestrian match. And then Logan comes in and it kind of explodes a little bit with him and Owens going after each other. And then Lashley spears Logan into the pod.
Which Corey Graves, like, he's dead. It's like, okay, come on, relax a little bit.
But then the sound has to cut away for about 5 seconds because Bobby Lashley's just saying, fucking hell, that fucking hurt. So, they had to cut away from that for a little while. And he was selling his elbow throughout the entire thing as well. So there was a lot of selling in this match, which is good because I'd rather people sell their injuries or sell the pain of a match. It's kind of hard to consider the Elimination Chamber being this wanton land of destruction when the countdown numbers have Slim Jims in them.
And they screwed it up too. It ended up being at one point it's supposed to be counting down from 10, and it went 4, 3, 2 Slim Jims and then something else, whatever.
Well, no, because the Slim Jims were always number ones. So it wasn't 4, 3, 2, 1. It was 14, and the Slim Jim was the one. Yeah. That's what I thought originally, because I thought, the countdown hasn't gone off on zero, but it was actually the Slim Jim was just number one at the start of it.
That's so stupid. I haven't had Slim Jim in I don't know how many years. I had, two in my entire life. Mostly when I was a kid, but I mean,
for real crossover, they should have made the chains out of Slim Jim.
You know, that would have been a little bit more interesting going through here. Then that would have also made it a little bit easier for AJ Styles to come in. Maybe he would have just chomped through. And did you see their overalls in 2K24?
Oh yeah, they put over the chambers when they were doing the lights over the top of them. It showed what their overall rating is in 2K24.
The little thing in the corner. I thought you were talking about overalls, clothing.
No.
I was I don't remember that happening.
So I think if my memory serves me correct, I think Randy Orton was rated at 91, Lashley at 90 or 89 or something. I think Kevin Owens was 86, Logan Paul was somewhere in the 80s as well.
I think that LA Knight's an 83, if I remember correctly.
I don't know if he saw his one, at least if we did, it would have been during his entrance, because obviously he wasn't in a pod, so we didn't see that throughout. But yeah, as soon as Logan came in, the match kind of picked up a little bit, but then you had, so Lashley was the first one eliminated by, you got Claymore on the grates, or the outside padding, and then came in, had a bit of a scuffle with LA Knight, and then got another Claymore in the face and got pinned, so...
Everybody knows that if you take a Claymore on a different surface, it hurts more.
Yeah, exactly. So,
yeah. It's the same as when Randy Orton hits an RKO and you're on the commentary table. Despite the fact that he lands on the table, it hurts more for your neck. Okay, sure.
And then it's kind of I thought it was weird because then I saw Lashley go off over to a different corner from where the door was. I thought, why is he waiting over there for that long? And then you have LA Knight going through, I think he hits Randy Orton with the blunt force trauma, and then he's going to hit that with hit Drew McIntyre with it. It looks like he's going to pin him, but then we realize, they've been waiting to get Lashley out there because AJ Styles is coming in with a steel chair, and now it's 100% confirmed it's going to be AJ Styles versus LA Knight at WrestleMania.
Which is it's weird that that's going to be a dedicated singles match in my mind, and it doesn't seem as much like it's going to be the multi-man ladder match that we were talking about as a thing. We'll talk about more of that in a minute, but yeah, it's they've been kind of feuding for a while now, and that's it. It's just LA Knight versus AJ Styles in a match for the sake of it.
Well, I guess you can argue they have been building it up since before the Royal Rumble. So even though they were part of that WWE Championship match, ever since then it has been largely focused between those two, because when AJ came back from his hiatus, the first person that he attacked was LA Knight. So I guess the argument is that they have been building this for several months, even if it doesn't feel like it as much. And I guess LA Knight does deserve a singles attraction at the show, even though it won't be a title match. In a way, it's kind of maybe a bigger deal for him to go one-on-one with AJ Styles at WrestleMania than to be part of a six-way ladder match for the Intercontinental title, which he might not win, or the US title that he might not win.
It kind of depends on what their plans are for going forward, because if it's just LA Knight versus AJ Styles, there's nothing on the line, they have a match, aren't you guys excited that LA Knight won a match at WrestleMania? I think that that's kind of lame, and then that kind of forecasts that they don't really want to push him, you know?
I think it's their job to make people interested in the match as a blood feud as opposed to a title match. So I think beating AJ Styles at WrestleMania, if they put enough interest into the feud and they make the feud feel meaningful enough, is not akin to winning a title match, but it feels like a next step in LA Knight's progression, if that's the case.
It's better than him being in the Andre the Giant Battle Royal or something.
Oh, yeah, exactly,
like that. Yeah. I mean, even winning the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal wouldn't really mean all that much, because we've seen over the years that if you win it, it doesn't mean jack shit. You know, immediately afterward, people just stop being on TV and stuff. So, but instead, it seems like we're getting Randy Orton versus LA Knight, because following some of this, Logan Paul. Because Lashley gets taken out. They do the whole thing with AJ Styles coming in. LA Knight gets pinned by Drew McIntyre. Kevin Owens just gets pinned by Randy Orton, which, even though he's, like, very adamantly feuding with Logan Paul right now, he just gets pinned by Randy Orton. And then at this point, I'm sitting there going, my God, I'm sick and tired of these shadows that are popping up on the screen, because they had something going on with the lighting that was weird, where it's, like, people's entire heads and stuff were just, like, I don't know what was happening, but then I was distracted with that. And then Drew McIntyre eliminates Randy Orton because Logan Paul hits Randy Orton in the back afterward.
Yeah.
Just like a hit strike, not like with the chair or anything like that. But that kind of indicates that we're probably getting Randy Orton versus Logan Paul for the US title, which makes me go back to a prediction I had many months ago that I was like, oh, I guess we're not getting that because they're not heading anywhere near that direction at all. And then it's like, God damn, I have to go back and change that again. But I can't see Randy Orton winning that title at Mania, which means they might keep this one Logan Paul going forward for quite a while.
So I kind of like the way they did it when it got to the final three so Logan manages to take down both of Orton and McIntyre, and he goes into his trunks and he pulls out the brass knuckles. And then the camera's just fully focused on the knuckles and really closed up on Logan Paul's face. And so they do that because then the camera pulls away and Orton is just diving in and hitting an RKO on Logan from out of nowhere. So I think that was some good camera work there. Orton pins Logan. And then I realised that when they were doing the final sequences in the same way with the Lashley thing with McIntyre, that Logan was still laying down on the outside, and they haven't taken him out of the ring yet. I think, oh, why is he still in there? Oh, he's going to screw around at Orton. And then he duly did hit him with the brass knucks in the face, knocked him out, and McIntyre crawled over and got the victory. I think Orton's winning the title at WrestleMania.
Yeah?
Yeah, Orton at this point in his career is US champion level. I would say he can be elevated if he wanted to again to be world champion, but I can see Orton being the next United States champion. He's won it already in his career. It's not like it's too much of a downgrade for him. It means that, yeah, I think that Logan's been champion since November or October, one of the two.
I think it might have been October. Yeah. No, I'm thinking about it more.
It's whenever Crown Jewel was, but
yeah.
But yeah, I think that Orton seems to be the right kind of guy to beat him at Mania for it. I mean, I'd say if they do have Logan beat Randy Orton, that's a big statement in their belief in Logan and trying to elevate him to even beyond the United States and potentially being a future world champion. But I think that the likelihood is that he'll do like a fancy looking dive, springboard dive. He'll get caught in an RKO and Orton will become the champion. Not necessarily like I could see a scenario where Orton wins the title, WrestleMania, gets that big pop because the crowd are excited that he's come back after being out for over a year, and then he's come back, won a title, and then Logan beats him for it at Backlash, like just wins the title straight back if they want to continue with Logan's run. But yeah, I think this is, it feels like a big time match, like Randy Orton, one of the most decorated guys in WWE's history, against the social media superstar Logan Paul. So yeah, that's, for me, that now feels like you have to make that a singles match. You don't want to conflate it with two or three other people in the match, even though I don't know what that necessarily means for whatever Kevin Owens is doing at WrestleMania.
Yeah, it kind of seems like they're going to just push Owens completely out of the mix, which is like kind of shitty, because not only was, like, you know, Kevin Owens one of those guys that, like, if we get like Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn main evented night one of last year, and then both of them are like not even basically on the card this year, that's going to be really weird. But it doesn't seem like that would make sense to have like Randy Orton versus Logan Paul versus LA Knight versus AJ Styles versus Grayson Waller versus Kevin Owens or like any of that kind of thing. That's way too complicated. It's just going to be Orton versus Logan Paul. And then everyone else, I guess, is just going to kind of figure something else out or just be in the Andre, which that sucks for, you know, people like Kevin Owens. And
I'm starting to think that, because even though the likelihood is it's going to be Gunther versus Sami Zayn for the Intercontinental title now, after all that change has happened, I could see a scenario where they decide to just go, let's just do Sami Zayn versus Kevin Owens.
Again, just like put those against each other again.
Because it's never happened at WrestleMania, right, has it? It might have done. They fought so many times.
No, they teamed at Mania twice.
Yeah.
Because it was one of the two of them against Miz Shane and Shane.
Shane and Brian.
Shane and Brian.
Yeah. That was Brian's return match from his his retirement. But yeah, I think that... but yeah, they might decide that they're both like looking at, because Zayn's on a losing streak and Owens seems to have lost out on the opportunity to fight Logan Paul. Or you have Owens versus Logan Paul in a rematch for the title on SmackDown and he comes up short on that one. And then they both just kind of, you'd have a shot of them just like sitting together backstage somewhere on an episode of Raw or an episode of SmackDown. They basically just look at each other and say, should we fight a match? How about
match?
Match. And they go, yeah. And then you literally don't do any other build other than just them saying, should we do it? Yeah, let's do it. it's just announced that they're going to fight each other at WrestleMania, and they just have the next chapter in their friendship, rivalry, all that other stuff at WrestleMania. I feel like
I'd be disappointed if they do that, to be honest, because I don't like when they do that for regular pay-per-views, let alone for Mania, if they just go like, don't you guys just want to do this match for the sake of it? We have nothing else in mind. Like, I always feel like if you run into a situation where they've got like problems with the card, that they still need to go through and do their due diligence to like make everything as good as they possibly can. And I don't really get the sense that that's entirely the case. What's going to happen a lot with this year?
I'd personally find that quite fun if they did that. It'd be one of the funniest builds to a match ever. Would just be them just staring at each other, just going, "Yeah, let's do it."
Well, I mean, the weird thing about it is, it's not like we haven't seen that, because there's been so many people over the past like 3 years in particular where their build to the WrestleMania match was, I don't have a match at WrestleMania. I need to do something for the sake of doing something. And then, you know, it's been like Seth Rollins. It's been like John Cena, where they're just like, man, I got nothing. And then you're like, wow, you're just this is the writers speaking for, you know, like when you watch TV shows and it's like a character will lampshade something. Lampshade's one of those writer's terms for anybody who doesn't know. Where they'll be like, you know, that seems like it's very convenient. And then they like look at the audience kind of. It's like WWE just being like, we got fucking nothing. We got zilch for these people. So then they just move on and, you know, but Logan Paul, Randy Orton at WrestleMania, I'm down to see that. And Drew McIntyre's got his match against Seth Rollins, who couldn't give a shit less about his World Heavyweight Championship because he's more interested in being Cody's buddy. And it was another match. It went down in history as a match.
I was far more disappointed with this match, though, was the women's match. Thought the women's definitely outshined this one.
Yeah, this was as forgettable as could possibly be. Like, yeah, I don't think that by SummerSlam people are remembering who's even in this match for the most part. And then we had our main event. Rhea Ripley beats Nia Jax. There you go. She did the Riptide. Once the bell rang, the match was like the biggest part of the match was over, other than the Riptide. The rest of it was just kind of a waste.
I thought it was, I'd go so far to say good. Probably wouldn't go any further than that. But I think that like it was a very classic, like bigger wrestler versus smaller wrestler. You had some things with like Rhea Ripley going for like Hurricane Ranas. She hits a frog splash at some point into it. They make her look super strong with Nia Jax hitting a Samoan drop on the announce table that doesn't break. And then I was so worried because she decides I'm going to stand on top of this rickety chair with wheels that is just twisting around, and I'm going to dive onto Rhea Ripley, even though she's only like a foot away from me. I thought, oh, that chair's going to fall over while she's diving, and she's just going to go face first into the announce table. But she manages to get enough onto Rhea to put her through with an elbow drop, then throw her back in, hit the annihilator, and then you get a near fall off of that. But yeah, that's like the whole point of this match was for Rhea to hit a superplex, then a kick to Nia's head, and then hit the Riptide and get the victory. So it was functionally what it needs to be. There was no botches, nothing obviously went wrong. So it's like, I think it's a perfectly like
adequate.
a solid like 6 out of 10 match, and which is probably the best that you can get out of. I'd say I don't think you can get any better match out of these two
probably going not, against each other.
And even let's say like, so in that case, it's like it's kind of a thumbs up because you can't ask for any more than those two than these two could put on together. But so yeah, I'd say for the most part it was adequate. It certainly wasn't my least favorite match of the night, but it was fine.
They did a good enough job to justify why they had this match. And yeah. Nia is definitely, she's been better this run than she's ever been.
I think. Yeah, she's definitely not trending towards worst wrestler of the year territory. Which for her is a marked improvement. It's a major upgrade. Yeah. It's amazing that like this year I won't be able to put her or Lash Legend into worst wrestler of the year categories. Because they're both doing a lot better than they used to.
Yeah, that's really somebody else is going to make a run for it. I don't know who that'll be, but you know, we got a couple more months when it comes around to that, so who knows.
But I'm trying to think who that is right now for the women's side of things. I think it's probably it's someone from NXT, but I don't watch enough NXT to really know who the absolute worst who's front running the women's worst one right now.
Maybe Izzy Dame. My end.
Haven't seen enough of her really to say one way or the other. Oh, there was
Frankie brings up Maxine. Maxine might make a run for that.
Oh yeah, Maxine did great. Valhalla as well.
Oh god, the only thing Valhalla seems to be able to do now is just tumble awkwardly to the outside. That's all she's ever been doing.
Yeah, they might be front running it for me just because with NXT you know that they're not going to be very good at this point in time. But
Valhalla can't even have her antlers anymore, so it's
well, yeah,
it's a lot easier to say antlerless Cole. I don't know why he struggles with that so much. They did the thing. Rhea ends the pay-per-view. Everybody's happy about that, and I'm not opposed to that being the main event because that's, they want to send the people home happy, and Rhea Ripley is the de facto babyface here and all, so it's like, yeah, okay, that makes sense. But at the same time, there is that part of me that's like, all right, I just sat through 5 hours worth of this, and I really kind of feel like I didn't need to watch it, so kind of screw you for making me get up earlier, and I should have just stayed up. It would have been a lot easier. I would have been less tired if I would have stayed up. I'll put it that way.
Yeah, there wasn't anything particularly like memorable or super over the top special on this show. I think that the things I'll take away from it or remember would be like Tiffany Stratton's performance, because I think that this was a big show for her, Rhea Ripley, with at least getting the big victory and getting to celebrate in front of her fans and getting that reaction coming out. And yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it for the most part. But, you know, it's definitely not the worst show that I've ever seen. It's not one of those, like, there was, like, absolutely zero value to this show. There was some good stuff, but yeah.
Yeah, it's not like, you're obviously, people that are checking this out now, you don't see, like, the title of, like, WWE Elimination Chamber sucked or something like that, I've done in the past. It's like, this wasn't a bad pay-per-view. It was a longer pay-per-view than it needed to be, filled with a bunch of C to B level content.
I'd say that there's been two big shows from WWE so far this year, and this is my favorite of the two of them. So,
and there's been one big show in AEW this year. His name's Paul White.
Actually, he was killed. He was killed end of last year, so we haven't seen him yet.
So. Oh, that's right. We haven't seen him this year. Yeah, so I mean, Elimination Chamber is a B-level pay-per-view that could have been upgraded to an A-minus level pay-per-view for them being in Perth and making a big deal out of that. But at the same time, they decided to make this as run-of-the-mill as they pretty much could. And all of the things that, like, I wish that there would be that kind of transparency where, you know, when Triple H and all them are doing the media and they're like, this is going to be like as good as WrestleMania or whatever, then you're like, you don't really think that though, right? Like, you didn't look at this and you're not feeling that proud of it, are you? Because you did a show and things happened, and if you didn't see it, you didn't miss anything.
Oh yeah, someone put a point that I actually was going to mention beforehand that I think needs to be added as well, just considering obviously the length of the show and how little actual content we saw. So I'm putting it on Twitter, which I did count out myself as well, and there were 55 minutes between the bell ringing at the end of the tag title match and the bell ringing for the start of the Elimination Chamber match. Men's Elimination Chamber match.
5 fucking minutes.
I know.
A full hour's worth
of no wrestling.
Nothing. Because it's not even like anything happened in that Grayson Waller thing. Yeah, exactly. Nothing happened in that hour. So, you know, massive middle finger when it comes to that.
Yeah. Tighten it up. End it after 3 hours. Mm-hmm. Stop putting us through this torture.
Just don't have people on the card if that's the case. Like, you just, or do something else. Do anything else. We mentioned before, like, why couldn't Cody have had, like, a tag match? Or, like, motherfuckers, why couldn't The Rock have had the match with Cody Rhodes here? You know, that would have been a great thing for that. But, you know, we're in that lull where nothing is going to happen for the most part, other than, like, maybe one thing each episode of Raw and SmackDown over the course of the next couple weeks. So we're going to be on that, like, trickle down time frame. And
6 weeks, baby. 6 weeks.
The good and the bad comes with this, but I think Elimination Chamber is one of those pay-per-views that at the end of the year I'm not going to write down as the worst. I'm not going to certainly write that down as one of the best. I don't think I'm going to have anything down best or worst from this year, except for maybe if I want to put that down as, like, that hour was kind of a waste. That would be my only real takeaway, you know, from it. I don't have anything else to say out there. This pay-per-view just ended the way that it was, and that's about it. Any other thoughts you have on this?
No, I think we've pretty much covered it. We don't want to overstay our welcome.
Like, another 55
yeah.
minutes.
Yeah.
Alrighty, everybody. Well, as always, let us know what you have to say. Comment section below. You know, send a tweet. Whatever it might be, any kind of fashion that you want to chime in, Discord or Mega Maniacs or something like that. Make sure that you are checking out the Marketplace stuff that I mentioned before and the Discord. Make sure you are checking back that Darkcast that I had mentioned before and that we had done the two of them for this month. Check out FanboysAnonymous.com as well for everything that's happening on that blue brand. Go to amangotree.com and you can see the Linktree stuff that's all up there. SmartCat Moment, Fanboys Anonymous, and other miscellaneous I don't know why I just said and other as if I have like and other website, but you know, that's up on there. And then of course you can follow me at Tony Mango, as you can see here. You can follow Callum at Wigmeister 14 up on the screen.
Yep, you can follow me there. You can check out the power rankings, which I haven't wrote yet, so I'll write them some point today, following up from the Elimination Chamber stuff, to see how Elimination Chamber has affected their position on the power rankings. You can check that out there at smartcommentary.com. And there you will also find the Fantasy League, also www.fantasyleague.com. I won the predictions contest for this edition, even though we all predicted the exact same results for every match because it was that predictable. This show, I got the time prediction right on the men's match. We actually all were under the time for the men's match, but I was the closest to it. It ended up
How much did it end up going? Yeah,
about 36:30, I believe. And
You know the number that I ended up getting? It was I took the average time and I just added like 1 minute to it. Mm. I was like, maybe that's maybe that'll give you the edge, and no, they went way overboard.
See, I took the time from the men's match from the 2021 Elimination Chamber, and I took a minute off of that. So
different strategies, yours worked out.
Yeah. So it means that what that means to the Fantasy League is that it means that I will be able to make two changes to my team between now and WrestleMania in the same way that Tony can. Rob can only do the one person changing because he's only won one prediction contest this entire year. So, and as it stands right now, there's Rob has just got over, I think he's just broken through the 800-point barrier. Whereas
how long ago was what's that for you and I probably?
Survivor Series time. me and Tony's currently sitting on about 1,170 points. I'm on 1,230 points. So there's about a 50-60 point difference, which can be made up at WrestleMania because the double points at WrestleMania for all the matches and results there as well. So it's definitely not an insurmountable gap, and we'll see what these weeks have in store, but yeah, that's where it stands right now. So we'll see which one of us two is atop the rankings by the end of the end of WrestleMania.
And WrestleMania has proven to be extremely beneficial for points in the past. There's been, was it the past 3 years or the past two at the very least, that like it came down to WrestleMania making all the difference.
And this time I have Cody Rhodes on my team. So the hope is that it doesn't go wrong this time.
So there's a part of me that kind of wants it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I'll gladly take a loss in the fantasy league for Cody to just win that fucking title and just be done with this whole setup and preamble and all. But yeah, that's it for the Elimination Chamber, everybody. Thank you, of course, for tuning in. Thank you for joining us for the live show for anybody that was able to join in live, or if you're listening after the fact, thanks for coming back afterward and clicking on the video and all. If you're listening to us on Amazon Music or Spotify or something like that, then, you know, whatever fashion you are listening to, and that's greatly, greatly appreciated. So thank you for all your support in one way or another. And stay tuned to what's happening next week, because we got more pay-per-view stuff coming your way with the AEW Revolution talk. The next episode is going to be the predictions for that. Then we'll have another round of the hot tags. Then we'll do the post show on Sunday, I think it is.
Sunday.
Saturday or Sunday, one of those two.
Yeah.
So yeah, if you're digging the pay-per-view point stuff, two more coming up your way, and then we'll start rolling into March, and we'll have the Superstar Score Sting most likely is going to be happening after that, and I don't know, probably another Mount Rushmore or something, and you know, if you have any suggestions, drop them in the comments below, let us know. If you want to make sure that we do something in particular, then the Pick Your Poison tier is the best way of doing that, but adios for now. This has been another Smart Count Moment, and we are being counted out.